Welcome to our 24th episode of But Why Though, a philosophy-themed comedy podcast with comedian Josh Carter
and philosopher Nancy Lopez.
And today we're joined by philosophy professor Christina Weinbaum
and also comedian and king of political comedy on the internet, Ryan Long, everybody.
Oh, the king. Yeah. Canadian king.
So today we're going to be discussing John Stuart Mill and some concepts that come up on his book On Liberty. So we're going to be looking at the marketplace of ideas and freedom of speech and how that applies to our lives today as well. So the first concept that I wanted to bring up that he talks about was the maximum happiness principle. And Mill establishes the principle of utility by stating that actions are right in proportion as they tend to promote happiness, wrong as they tend to produce the reverse of happiness. By happiness is intended pleasure and the absence of pain. By unhappiness, pain and the privation of pleasure. Mill 77. So simply put, acts that produce pleasure or prevent pain are the most desirable. So people should only do the things that bring the greatest amount of happiness to the greatest number of people. So this is one of the main principles in his argument. And he's saying that we should do what is going to bring about the most happiness for the most amount of people. So I wanted to ask you guys, do you agree? Should we only do those things that bring the greatest amount of happiness to the greatest number of people? Is this an effective way to establish rules in society? What do you guys think?
Maybe at first, but then like at a certain point, you have to give people the hard truth if they need to hear it, right? So it depends on what the subject matter is, maybe.
I don't know if you guys heard this, but apparently John Stuart Mill was actually replaced in all the libraries with Trevor Noah Mill.
I didn't know.
Yeah. Hello.
So what happens if we're always trying to do the greatest number of people? What if there's a minority that doesn't agree with the majority? Like,
oh, now I see how this has to do with freedom of speech. At first I was wondering.
Yeah. So my problem with this principle is that, you know, obviously there are going to be people who are excluded because you can't make everybody happy. And it's the other issue with this is that it can be difficult to determine if our actions are actually going to produce happiness. So my thing is that while this is a really nice idea, I don't think this is the most realistic way to effectively establish rules in a society. And just to like make clear, this is also like the first idea of what utilitarianism is supposed to be. And it was called act utilitarianism, where we look to the consequences of our actions and hope that they produce the most amount of happiness for the greatest number of people. They actually realized at a later point that maybe this doesn't quite work, and they reformulated a new idea, and that was rule utilitarianism, and where you're supposed to appeal to a certain set of rules, and those rules are the kind that should produce happiness. So it seems that they actually also thought that maybe this was unrealistic.
Yeah, is it even actually possible to do this?
I think, yeah, I mean, Christine obviously knows far more what she's talking about around this stuff than me, especially when it comes to the history of it. But to me, like, even, like, to some degree, I agree with, like, utility is probably, like, the best, you know, a good measure to move forward and how to look at things. But the problem with all of these things is, if you say happiness, that means 10 different things to 10 different people. Like, I don't really subscribe to a formula myself where happiness is the most important thing. Like, I'd consider happiness one of, you know, 10 components that I need in my life. So a lot of people say, oh, what's the best way to live your life? Like, to be most happy. I would say depends on what your goals are, right? So in a lot of times it depends on what your society's goals are. And those are sort of determined culturally, not absolutely.
Okay, but if happiness is one of 10 components and it's the only component you have, can you really be happy?
Well, I think that depends on what you want, right? Like, if your goal is happiness and, you know, we all agree on what, like, that definition means, then for sure you could organize your society that way if that's how you choose. But, like, for me, let's – okay, so if you look at, like, being an athlete, right? It's, you could say food's the most important thing, but really, like, food's, it's having more of that doesn't help. Like, there is a base level of, you know, when you talk about income, the same way that there isn't that much of a big difference between having $100,000 a year and $200,000 in terms of, you know, general safety or, you know, peace of mind or whatever, right? So if you look at food, you could say food's the most important thing. We should, you know, make society around that. But if you actually, once there's a certain level of that, it kind of doesn't, that rule doesn't really apply anymore, right? There's like diminishing returns on all these principles. And happiness for me, it would be like, you know, let's say I'm trying to accomplish, let's say I wanted to be the biggest comedian in the world. I need to be like a base level of happiness. Like, I don't want to be depressed. I don't want my life to be a mess, but there's only a certain level where I'm like, okay, that's how much I need to perform to accomplish what I want to accomplish, which isn't happiness as a, as the final product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who is to say that happiness is what we're ultimately all looking for? We could all be looking for different things as well.
Or we're all looking for those things and then we define those things as happiness.
Yeah. I feel that's a good point right there. I mean, I feel like happiness is the most general term, though, of what we're all collectively looking for. So, but like, if you want to get boiled down to the specifics, it might not apply to everyone, or people might have different definitions. Like if you grew up poor, probably happiness is like thinking about like growing up and having a mansion and like two cars and like that. I know that's how I used to think when I was growing up. I mean, I wasn't super poor growing up, but I used to think that's what happiness was, like growing up to be rich or something like that.
Or success.
Christina, you might – I remember – so my friend's a philosophy professor, and we used to always like he's at University of Chicago, I think, right now. He's from Toronto too. And I remember – he kind of explained this. I remember when we were like college, he had a good point. It was like, even when people talk about happiness, you're like, because philosophy, if you say the most important thing is to be happy, it's like everyone can sort of agree with that. And you're like, okay, well, A, what does that mean? But B, even if you do agree, like, what's the best way to get there? Like, knowing that you're trying to achieve that doesn't even really get you closer. Like, so I think that with what you're talking about, I do agree that like utility is probably like a closer way to look at how to organize a society than happiness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think like happiness looks different to everyone. So it's almost impossible to gauge how are we going to provide happiness to everyone if everybody's thinking of it in completely different ways. Like the way I think of happiness is completely different from the way you look at happiness. And so to base a whole society around determining, you know, what are we going to do to provide the greatest amount of happiness to the greatest number of people, it seems like an almost impossible task.
Probably the best, you know, the better way to look at it is, which, you know, a lot of places do, is we can't say that, you know, we can promise you this happiness, but we can promise you this like lack of unhappiness. Like we can promise you that it's illegal for someone to come shoot you. We can, you know, promise you that it's illegal to someone to come and take your kids away. Like whatever it is, we make limits on what can't happen to you as opposed to like what will happen to you.
That's true.
So, yeah. And that kind of, but yeah, that like, I think of those, even with like the thing you're saying with humor, it's like, oh, this is way, it's kind of like, and then even that sort of taken as a given, I guess, like all the other philosophers, like Rand and like Ayn Rand or whatever, then they go back and sort of like justify why that's why good, right? They'll be like, oh, if it's actually the most just way to live, that you kind of be selfish for yourself. So even if you kind of agree on that, like different philosophers would even agree on like how to get there. Whereas Rand would be like, yeah, being selfish is actually the best way for the maximum happiness in society. And other people would be like, no, that's complete opposite of why I think. And then you're like back at the divide anyway.
Have you ever seen, speaking of selfish and Ayn Rand, have you seen the movie for Atlas Shrugged? I think it was selfish to change up the actors every single part. To watch the full movie, you know, it's hard to track who played who. And that it was three parts. And every single part, it was a completely different cast. I don't know what they were doing.
Every movie, they changed the people?
Yeah. It was like three parts to get the whole story. It was completely different cast every part. And you had to relearn the characters. Not a good stoner flick, you know?
You're like, who are these people?
Yeah, that's the only second to win is when they have like the two main characters and they both look identical and they just try to like, slip it in. That's my pet peeve. They basically have two guys that look like Matt Damon playing like the good guy and the bad guy.
Oh, sure, yeah.
All right.
Sorry to go off subject. I have ADD for everyone just listening to this as their first episode.
It's like since Face Off has there been a more confusing character development.
All right, so I'll move on to another principle that Mill talks about, and that's harm and offense, and whether one is more hurtful than the other one. So Mill says that there's a difference between harm and offense. Harm is something that would injure the rights of someone else or set back important interests that benefit others. An example of harm would be not paying taxes because cities rely on the money to take care of its citizens. An offense, according to Mill, is something which we would say hurt our feelings. These are less serious and should not be prevented because what may hurt one person's feeling may not hurt another's. And so offenses are not universal. So I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think? Do you agree with Mill? Is there a difference between a harm and an offense when it comes to speech? Can speech...
Christina hates Mill.
No, I
hate this guy.
And can you think of any examples?
I have the biggest problem here because, first of all, John Stuart Mill's living in a time where he probably doesn't care about who he's offending. And anybody that could be offended, nobody cared about them. It didn't matter. The problem here is that offenses are harmful in the grand scheme of things. If you're thinking about modern day, like what's offensive, and you can think of like derogatory slurs, racial slurs and such and so on, and making fun of people for their incapacities or whatever. You know, that's considered offensive. And I think the way in which those things cause harm is by, you know, even saying certain things in a joking way, you know, you're saying it playfully. You're also making it acceptable. And there are certain people that are going to see that and they're going to perpetuate harmful behavior towards certain groups of people. I love stand-up comedy and I love the things that comedians say and I find it funny. But I think that there are certain people in positions of power that might take things to an extent that can be really harmful. And that's not okay.
Like, you mean like if someone saw like a racial comedian bit, like who was like a boss of a company, you mean, or something like that?
I guess I think the greatest example I could possibly think of right now is Trump and him being in a position of power and then using certain terms or slurs to talk about people and then having a lot of people see him, a person in a position of power. They think that it's okay, and he kind of sets the precedent for it to be acceptable. And that can be really bad.
Yeah, I think they're like, even with all of these conversations, which is, you know, everyone's having, this is probably like quite a hot button, like divide in America, but there's always, you kind of want to make the distinction between like moral and cultural, you know, harm and what we would agree is good or bad and what's legal. Cause at the end of the day, it's like, if you know, you could have your definition of what you think's harmful. And I don't think anyone would agree that there's like no level of nonverbal, you know, if you run a campaign to ruin someone's life and destroy their, you know, to argue that that's like not harmful would just be, of course, crazy, right? So there's no question you can do harm without doing physical harm, in my opinion. Just a matter of like who thinks what is harm, and but more importantly, who gets to decide is, you know, obviously the most important thing, and what happens once they decide. So that it always kind of goes back to the cultural conversation of like, what society do you want to live in? Like, what level of freedom versus safety? And so if you're on the side of like, you know, we need to stop this harm, you're on the side of, you know, we want more safety versus freedom. And there's a lot of countries like, you know, America, the reason why there's so much pushback is because America has like, you know, a big freedom culture, and that's kind of ingrained into a lot of things. And maybe that's changing. And other countries where, you know, if you lived in North Korea right now and you're like, hey, you're not allowed to do this, no one's going to be like, well, it's kind of just normal for them. So culture, you know, kind of exists. Like I come from Canada, right? And they actually, if comedians say the wrong thing about someone, you can actually get fined. So if, you know, I don't know if you know, like Mike Ward got fined $100,000 because he made fun of someone, and the Human Rights Tribunal essentially says, so America would be more on the freedom side, Canada would be more on the safe side, and there's like a spectrum. And I think that, you know, that's why people vote, and there is like a cultural conversation of where that ends up. Like that's kind of the laws and follow. What I don't like is when, let's say in comedy, for example, let's say we do a consensus of a room. I'm in a room full of people, or a comedian's in a room full of people. You do a joke and there's 500 people in there of all, you know, New York crowd, let's say all different genders, ethnicities, whatever. Everyone just comes to the show. You do a, and then most of the crowd likes it. Everyone's laughing, and someone else kind of sees it afterwards and they go, oh, this was bad, you shouldn't say that. And it was like, well, you're kind of deciding that you're like the arbiter of what, like what the cultural thought of society is, and people, and a lot, it's sometimes it comes to a point where there's a small group of people that have an opinion that actually most people kind of don't think, and they're sort of becoming the authoritarian force on that opinion. So I think that's kind of like where I, you know, like where comedians get up in arms or whatever. We start to become babies because comedians are such. Someone said to me the other day, they're like, "Yo, what was it? It was like comedians are so like melodramatic." I was like, "Yeah, we kind of are." We're like, "Dude, they're taking away our rights." Like, if you get.
I think our freedom is really important, but I guess, you know, I do think like what matters ultimately is, as a person who is saying things, I guess I think what matters most is having the open mind, so that if somebody is offended by what you say, you should be able to listen to them and hear them out and understand why they thought it was offensive, and kind of like, I guess, adjust from there. And maybe you decide that you don't want to adjust because of what you were just saying, you know, maybe this person's actually in the minority and they're trying.
I was saying it a little more, and I think I understand what you're saying, and that is probably makes sense. But I think that more so it's that you feel like these are bad faith actors. So like, let's say you have a girlfriend and she hates you and clearly wants to break up, and she comes and she's like, you know, like you make the food too hot, and you're just like, it's just everything with you. Like, so I think, I think a lot of people start to feel like that these people that are like, you know, hey, I'm like offended by this, they A, don't believe them, and C, there's certain people on the internet that would be like, oh, I'm so offended. And you're like, no, it's actually the opposite. You were like stoked that you know, you got excited that you saw this thing that you got to like yell at or something. So yeah. I think, and again, not to mention, there's no shortage of comedians that are like crossing the line, and that's part of it, and whatever. There's going to be a, you know, on a stand-up stage, you cross the line and people don't laugh. Like, that's the kind of misconception, that you go to some small town and like say all these slurs and everyone laughs. Like, people don't like that shit. It's like, they're way harder, way easier to pull off an Uber joke than like a, you know, trashing a minority joke. But so I think that it is. It's just like, no, people aren't as, you know, bad. They don't sit in an audience. They're like, you go up and you're like, oh, this guy in a wheelchair is in it. No, people hate that, right? So
the only way I could tell when a comedian's racist is if they just like randomly bring up like too many black jokes in one 5 minute set. It doesn't have to be bad. It doesn't have to be jokes that offend me or that I'm offended by. I'm like, you're thinking about black people a little too much for 5 minutes. Yeah. But like, I'm not offended at that. I'm really like laughing at him because like, you're exposing your own psychology to another comedian who like knows like the thought process.
Like what's 13% of 5 minutes? Is that, that's how. No, yeah, I have a theory about his small town idea though, which is, when you're in a place like New York, someone says a joke about black people, Asians, whites, whatever. It's like those groups. You know, it is that group. But if you're in fucking Smithtown, Indiana, and someone says a black joke, you know the black guy in town. It's James. Like, you know him. It's your buddy. Like, you can't. It's not
So it's all it's all what James is doing. So if James is a little bit, like, crazy, you know.
I definitely adapt like that 100%. Like, I would 100%. Like, when I do, like, an all-black room, which, like, in Toronto, I used to do, like, tons of black rooms, and I was going super hard on, like, black stuff. I would even be, like, joking around about, like, being the KKK. And then on the road, I was like, you're right. If you're an all-white room, I'm, like, making fun of white people more. And kind of is the funny thing that people don't realize, or, you know, some people realize, but when you go to a club, like, the people can't wait for you to make fun of their group. Like, I just came from Connecticut, right? And there was this, like, table of, like, Hasidic Jew dudes. Like, there's, like, five of them. And every time I mentioned anything about Jew, they're, like, dying, right? And then there's, like, an Indian guy table over, like, three, like, kind of Indian, like, finance frat bros. And I started talking about Tamil shit. And then, like, you could see, and then I'd go back to the Jews. You could see them being, like, you couldn't do Indians again. Yeah, like, they want, you know, you want... You're like, dude.
Well, like, I think in general, audiences could tell when your jokes are coming from, like, a place of love, or if they're coming from, like, mm-hmm. a place of disdain. But sometimes you do have those arbitrators who can't make the difference and can't tell your heart.
It's true.
And they'll try to, like, dictate what the whole room feels. So yeah, it is a fine line, you know, but like I'm not saying it's always going to be the comedian right every time. I've definitely seen like comedians that I feel like have gotten out of hand, and it's hard. Like, as a comedian, I'm not even allowed to say shit. That's bad. Like, that's like betraying my own, but like, it happens sometimes, but like, but like, most of the times we are right though, like 75%. At least, right? Am I right?
Yeah, because it's like comedians are like the new version of court jester.
I feel like most of us, maybe it's just because I've been doing it for so long. Like, most of us just know. I mean, if you've been doing it for more than 5 years, you should know what you're doing and how to read a room and what your boundaries are and all of that.
Well, in medieval times, it's the only ones who can tell the truth. Sorry, go ahead.
If you're, I was just saying, if you're a professor, or, you know, and a lot of, you don't practice your theories by like saying them to a bunch of people and finding the spot where it pisses everyone off and then taking it back a little bit. So it's like, we kind of, you know, we get to those points. Like, the finished product is, I like the way that Andrew Schultz said it. He was kind of like, it's like when you're watching someone ride a bull, like, you don't want it to be so safe that there was like no danger, but you don't want the guy to fall off too quick. Like, you want him to like almost fall off, but then he actually lands it. And that's kind of when it's, in my opinion, comedy is kind of at its best. Mm. But that when you start that, it doesn't always work. And then it's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's hard to be able to tell where to draw the line and who gets to decide these things also.
Well, the audience. So the audience does. You do it and they're like, they don't laugh, and you're like, well, there it is.
But let's go back to the point that Christina made, because I think she made a point, and I think there's a big distinction. Like, when Trump is doing something, it's a lot different though than when like a comedian is doing something on stage. Like, because like, if Trump does something that's like kind of like an offensive joke that I would tell, like, it's a whole different thing, because now it's like the president of the United States saying that, so people could like think that's the American way, is to think that these people are this or that this is a shithole country. So that, I think that that's like the point that you're trying to make, right?
I think another point is that intention matters. So if your intention is to be playful, and that you're trying to get a rise out of people in like a joking way, then that's not so offensive. That's not so harmful. But if your intention is to be harmful, and you're trying to get a rise out of people, make people angry, pit people against one another, then obviously that's bad.
Christina, and I think this is where it always kind of gets mucky, because like, yeah, you talk about that. Like, if we were having a conversation about like our friends, it would be so obvious. Like, if we were like, oh, this guy did this, something of that, we'd be like, yo, do you think he meant well, or was he being an ass? So like, we could all,
right?
But then I guess it's, so what happens next? You know what I mean? If like, so let's say you take that philosophy and you're like, this is, then what? Like, do they make laws? I guess that's where it starts to get sticky. And then what happens? Is it a punishment if you say something the deciding factor decides that you were actually trying to be mean and your intention was bad? And so kind of that's where it all gets like so messy, because it's,
yeah,
it's kind of like a social conversation that like now starts to have like legal ramifications.
I think that if anything, if you were going to make laws like that, I think it's more important to apply those types of laws to something like serious news rather than entertainment in the first place. Like, I think if anything should be regulated, any kind of speech, it should be what people consider like reliable news or like something mm-hmm. that's supposed to like affect how you like live your day.
Want to know something funny? I think I've ever really watched Fox and CNN like that much, even though I've done like a couple of videos about it, but I mostly see clips and people talking about it, whatever. But then I went to Virgin Islands and they had like TV in the hotel room. So I was flipping back and forth to see it. And it's pretty funny. The funniest thing that was making me laugh so much is Fox can't get good commercials now. So the CNN has like, you know, Honda and whatever, and Fox, because no one wants to advertise, they're selling back-to-back sleep apnea mask cleaner. that's so funny. That was killing me.
That was great.
Oh, thank you.
That was great. So I've been thinking about that a lot. So I just want to say my dad, he does this. It's so frustrating. He lives in San Diego, so I visit him a couple times. I visit my parents a couple times a year. My dad will watch both Fox and CNN, and now he's introduced Newsmax to the cycle. Oh, yeah. Newsmax is, woo, it's crazy.
All the Fox people don't like, all the Trump people don't like Fox anymore because they think he's
sold
them out.
Yeah, yeah,
really?
They're out.
Oh, wow.
He kind of drives himself crazy watching all this stuff. But I think, the thing about the news is it's not even about informing people anything anymore. It's like the purpose of these major news channels, it's convincing you of their point in the argument and then pitting you against anybody that doesn't agree with you.
Yeah, and just selling you back like the consensus of your side.
Yeah.
It's very echo chambery now.
Yeah, everyone wants to join a team, you know, but back in the day it was like Team Edward or Team whoever from Twilight, you know, that was just training people for the future, you know, about with the political future of America, you know.
My mom, she lives in Canada and she doesn't like almost watch the news at all, but then because of the quarantine I guess she's been like trapped in, so she started watching CNN and the last election, and about a week before, so the whole Trump thing she wasn't really paying attention, a week before the election she like went full resistance, so she's been mainlining CNN. She called me, she's like, this Trump guy, he's like, he's calling other people ugly, he's friggin' orange, and she's telling me, she goes, I think his wife's gonna leave him, like, we need to get rid of this guy. And I'm like, Mom, tell me what a senator is. She was like, I don't know. Okay, whatever. Then she's out now after the election's over. She's like, yeah, I'm out of the game. I'm out of the politics game. She doesn't even live in the country.
Oh, my God. So this is all connected to Mill's harm principle as well, because his harm principle states that the only actions that can be prevented are ones that create harm. So person can do whatever he or she wants as long as their actions don't harm other people. So when it comes to speech,
well, do you think like this whole news cycle definitely delivers harm? Like, do you guys know any like huge junkies?
Some people say it does.
Like,
so
I have people in my family, they're literally Fox News junkies. Like, obviously it's the white side of my family I'm talking about. but yeah, I have people. It's oh yeah, thank you. It's like, it is like almost like a drug addiction. Like literally, I don't mean to say this in a bad light. This is all with all due respect. Like my grandmother, like she'll have Fox News on every room of the house and we'll have it playing. And like, it's like, maybe it's like something of old age, or maybe it's like a coincidence because maybe she's getting a little bit older, but I kind of feel like her watching it so much more in like recent years has made her like a lot more like she gets, I don't mean to put her business out in the street, but I'm just using this as an example. I shouldn't have said my grandmother. I should have went back and said, this woman, let's call her
the
Sue. She lives in, that I know and I'm really good friends with, who lives in this retirement home. Like she's like not friends with anyone at a retirement home because she watches all this Fox News like all the time by herself.
Everyone?
Yeah, she's like the one that
she's
everyone
like these
hates.
Friggin'
everyone hates her in her retirement home. Now she has to spend the rest of her fucking life being hated by all of her neighbors and everyone around her. I'm not like saying, I'm not, and I don't mean to sound like an apologist. I just feel bad because it's my own grandmother. She's done so much for me. Like through for my life and like support. My mother was single growing up and she helped like support us grow. So I mean, she's like a great woman, and it just makes me sad to see her now like in this
state. They're turning everyone into soldiers.
Basically I kind of feel like she was recruited in a way.
Yeah, she got conscripted to the Trump Army.
She was always conservative and Republican. She actually one time even got into an argument with Hillary Clinton at like a fundraiser. Wow. And she was like in the news for it, but it was like cool. It wasn't like an obnoxious kind of thing. It was like an intelligent kind of debate.
What happened? Hillary said she killed 4 people, and your grandmother said she killed
20. No, but I don't know. I don't mean to be going off topic. I'm just saying that this shit could be like drugs to some people, right?
That's like your battlefield like promotion.
Well, yeah, because what's more exciting than some like tuning into the news and having someone confidently repeat your views back to you? It's like dopamine. It's like,
and then making you more afraid of the opposing views. Like, but they like, I feel like they just like blow. Like, I get emails from her and stuff, and like, I get different things about how Joe Biden like illegitimately met his wife. But I'm like, I thought that he had met her because her and her husband worked on his campaign. Now you're sending me emails that she was the babysitter of Joe Biden during some other. I'm like, you have to get the story straight if you want me to believe this shit. I think that I get filtered out, though. I think I don't get the extreme conservative offensive emails because I think I have like I have white female cousins who get like very upset, like 4 times a year, but I don't see the same emails that they do. So I at least get a little bit of a filter.
I don't think it's that, whatever. I'm pretty sure that's like standard that people have their relatives right now, you know, and it depends on where you live. I'm sure there's a lot of people with their relatives in, you know, New York sending them, you know, shit about how bad Trump is. And then it's just like where it depends on where you were born, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's what Mill sort of tries to touch on.
It's hard though. As a comedian, it's hard to like talk about, like to say you want something censored though, but to see like what this country has become and like just in the last, like how I feel like we've declined in the last like 4 to 6 years probably.
How?
Like because of just sentiment against each other, like in divide and stuff.
I mean, and does it help? Dividing. Like, I mean, even look at the censorship thing. So like when Trump got kicked off or whatever and of Twitter and everything, and they got rid of Parler and everyone was kind of championing it. And then basically like two weeks later when the GameStop thing happened and they were getting rid of the GameStop Reddit, those like the exact same people were all like, this is, you know, crazy that they're stopping the you're like, oh, eventually, it's not even eventually, it was 2 weeks later that all the same people were kind of like, oh, now this same censorship is like screwing over something I care about. So it's, you know, the turnaround on, you know, going against principles for whatever you want at that moment is not very, it moves pretty quick right now.
I don't know if it's censorship. Like, I'm not for censorship. I do think it's important to stop the spread of misinformation. Like I don't really like conspiracy theories and a lot of that stuff worry me sometimes because a lot of vulnerable people, they watch these things or they listen to these things and they get convinced of stuff that perhaps isn't true, and that can be really harmful. But I think what's more important than censorship or not censorship but stopping the spread of misinformation is that we need to kind of teach everyone to think critically so that they can figure out on their own, you know, what to believe in, what's good to believe in, and what's potentially harmful. Because people are so vulnerable, and the reason they're so vulnerable is because they haven't really learned the skills to really think about things. Like when someone's making an argument, it's like, why? Don't just accept whatever you hear. You need to think really deeply about it. And the problem is people don't think very deeply. They're very quick to accept whatever they hear. And especially if it's coming from someone who's very confident in what they're saying.
Especially if it's what they want to hear too. Especially if like, if you're going to say someone that they're supposed to not like, who they don't have enough reasons to not like, also molest kids, like, or something like, you know,
like, no, I mean, like if you I don't think you're right that,
I think that is how that stuff started, like a lot of that QAnon stuff. At first, I'm very into conspiracy theories. I feel like Republicans have ruined conspiracy theories like Christians ruined rock music. You know, I can't be out as a conspiracy theorist on the internet no more, you know? Like, I can't be like proud conspiracy theorist. Now people are like, does that mean you think Jews have a laser? I'm like, if anything, the government has a laser. I don't want to bring religion and race into my conspiracy theories. Conspiracies I liked were like conspiracies like who shot John F. Kennedy, or like, did we really land on the moon? And like, mm-hmm. like shit like that, like that there's like a reason of...
You like
of
the late night AM stuff, basically.
Yeah, I wasn't into the 9/11 conspiracies, but I feel like 9/11 conspiracies have gotten so big, that's probably true at this point, right? Like, do you know what I'm saying? I feel like we probably had some kind of involvement. Just like it was a conspiracy that we put cocaine on the streets in the 80s, now we have things on Netflix just saying, yeah, the government admitted we've allowed it to happen. I think that same kind of thing is going to happen like in like 10 more years. We'll find out about that, something like that with 9/11.
Dude, they're right all the time. So the first part is, I mean, listen, like you guys are talking about right now that this misinformation is getting really bad and all that stuff. And you can blame it on the internet, but you go, did it help? Like basically trying to make it illegal to like think a certain thing and trying to like make it all disappear. I mean, that's the question it sounds like we're about to have, but it's like, did that help? And like, I don't know, does it seem like conspiracy theories spread more or less, you know, by trying to make them forbidden, right? And then the second part is,
and they're all whack conspiracy theories now that you made them forbidden. It's like you don't get the best weed when you make weed illegal. You're getting the guy growing it in his garage, you
know? And they're right sometimes. I mean, like, you know, forever it was like, oh, pedophile rings, you know, even that stuff, and people go, oh, as if, and then the Epstein one, like everyone would pretty much agree. But if that hadn't been proven, it's 10 months before, that would be called misinformation. So it always kind of goes back to like who gets to decide, right? And it's like the pedophile rings, every single one of those was a conspiracy. Then the Catholic Church, the British foster care system, like
I definitely think that there are pedophile rings out there for sure, and I do think that there's a Hollywood pedophile ring for sure. But I don't like that they just decided to put every enemy of the Republican Party on a list and throw it on the internet. That's like, I actually did look up Epstein's flight logs, and most of those lists, like, none of the
Chrissy
people
Teigen?
Show. Yeah. I feel bad. I had Chrissy Mayer on the show, and we were talking about Chrissy Teigen.
Stuff, dude.
Yeah,
she's
we were talking about Chrissy Teigen because it was like the day after. And I was listening back to the episode, and we were talking about some flight log that Chrissy Teigen was on, and it was like supposedly was supposed to be 2005. And I said, but wasn't Christine like 13? And she was like, no, we're not talking about 15 years ago. But then I realized, because we're in 2020, you don't think of like 2005 being like 15 years ago.
Right.
But it totally is. You know, we're clearing up like season one drama now. All right, I'm sorry. Let's get back on topic here. I get so like into like talking about conspiracy.
But you're right though. They've moved the Overton window crazy far, because it used to be, did we land on the moon? Now they're trying to be like, is there a moon? You know, it's too far. Like they've.
I think that they do that on purpose to make you not want to believe in conspiracy theories. I have a conspiracy theory.
I kind of agree with you. Dude.
I have a conspiracy theory that any true conspiracy theory they make a Jewish version of.
What?
You know, let me tell you exactly what I mean.
Josh is about to get into some JQ right now.
No, let me tell you exactly what I mean.
And we're off Facebook.
I have a friend whose father teaches physics at CUNY, like City Tech or something. And like way back, like maybe in the early 2000s, I was like into conspiracy theories and science and all this kind. I was like a science nerd. So he sent me this thing called harp.gov. And it's it was basically a government website where they were testing like machines where they could precipitate the air and create hurricanes, basically. And it was like they were testing it, then just one day it was just not online anymore, and now all of a sudden there's conspiracy theories about Jews being able to control the weather. I think that we now have the capability to control the weather as a government, and we may have caused some of those Haitian disasters that we funneled so much money out of from like donation. That could definitely be a possibility.
Yeah.
And there's validity to making a conspiracy theory like that. But to just like make shit up off thin air, I don't like that shit, because it just ruins all conspiracy theories for all of us.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
You're sort of like a conspiracy theory hipster a little bit.
Yeah, I was here before everyone else.
He's a purist. He's a conspiracy theory literalist, if you could find one of them.
Yeah, you're like, these new kids, they don't know.
OG.
So that's the thing. It's hard to tell, to separate what's false and what's actually fact. So Mill argues against censorship and in favor of the free flow of ideas. So he's asserting that no one alone knows the truth, or that no one idea alone embodies either the truth or its antithesis, or that
no one has a monopoly on truth.
Or that truth left untested will slip into dogma. So he claims that the free competition of ideas is the best way to separate falsehoods from fact. So yeah, is that true? Because he thinks that if we don't let ideas into the world, yeah, if we don't let ideas into the world, then we're hurting ourselves by not giving ourselves the option of learning about different arguments or different ways of looking at things, and we can separate what's false from fact by doing this. So, what were you gonna say, Christina?
Hey, look, that's all fine and dandy. It's a beautiful idea. I love the free marketplace of ideas. But you have people in the free marketplace of ideas that speak as if they know the truth, as if they know everything that they're talking about. So I feel like the marketplace of ideas is vulnerable to corruption. People in positions of power can say whatever they want and get away with it and have armies of people believing everything they say. That's the problem. That's, you know, there's people that have an unfair advantage. So it just bothers me, because I think that these are great ideas. It's that there's wonderful theories here, but it's like, does it work?
Well, it's all about separating it. Wouldn't it be all about separating it from law again? Because you go, you know, if you don't, like, there's five big religions or however many, three big Abrahamic religions or whatever, right? So if you believe the other two are false, so if you could say, if you believe Christianity is, like, completely false, then you would say the church and all of the people that follow it are spreading fake information and spreading lies about untruths about what happens when you die and, you know, misinformation, you could call that, if you think that that's untrue. But it's like, so what would be the, you know, what would happen next? You make those ideas illegal? Like, you're not allowed to have, you know, one of the religions on, like, the internet? Like, it's always kind of comes back to, it's like, because I agree with you. You're like, there's stuff that isn't good, but is it better than the alternative of what's it going to take to stop it?
I think what needs to happen is that instead of there, like, I think that the marketplace of ideas would work better if there was a level playing field. If we didn't have groups of people that were vulnerable to misinformation, because everybody was equal in their understanding of things, that way, you know,
how do you get there?
So you get there by making education accessible to everyone, but that's a very tricky thing to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a whole other
project. What about the differences amongst people, though, too? Like, you know, you got a person who might be really gifted with language but suck at math, and then you got a person who's really good with numbers, can't spell for anything. So I guess I wonder, like, Christina, how do you have any insight as to, like, how that could be moved, you know, how we can move toward that or something?
I don't mean to say that, like, everybody needs to be, like, equally intelligent and good at every single thing. But the most important thing, I guess, is just, like, as I was saying before, critical thinking. I think, like, that's the ultimate skill set that everybody should have. And there shouldn't be people, like, that to me shouldn't be a privilege. There shouldn't be people that are better than that. Better at that than others.
You think critical thinking is more of a learned thing than an innate thing to a person?
Yeah, I think I do. I think that maybe there are some people that are more, they're probably better at it just because, you know, it's how they were raised or whatever, like, to just be more open-minded or to key in on what people are saying and think about it more carefully. So I do think that there are some people that are better at critical thinking. But I think overall it is a learned skill. It is something you have to cultivate over time, because, like, when you're a child, you'll listen to whatever someone in a position of authority will say to you. Everything your parents say to you is true until proven false. But I think for the most part, well, there's definitely those kids that are like, why, and they question everything. But then there's also kids that are just like, yeah, whatever you say, and they'll just repeat whatever their parents say to them. Yeah. Like everybody, like I live in a very conservative neighborhood. And I go to the skate park sometimes to practice roller skating, and all I hear are these little 12 and 10 year olds just like talking, like just saying the most outrageous things. It's all this bullshit, and I can just tell like it's everything that their parents told them is true.
They're
talking about politics.
Twelve years old. Look at these nerds.
I remember
politics when you're 12. Got a life.
I remember there was this kid there was a bunch of kids in the skate park. It's mostly white kids. But then there was like a group of like Hispanic kids that came, and somehow they ended up, this was before Biden got elected, so everybody was like, who's gonna win? And they were all talking about Trump, and this one dude was like, everybody in this skate park supports Trump. And like these kids were like, no. And then they all started asking each other, who do you support, blah blah blah. And I was like, what is going on?
Gross. That sounds like a horrible campaign ad that Trump should pay for.
Skateboarding is supposed to be fun. What the hell?
Yeah.
I was a kid with the skateboarders, we would go and get kicked out of malls and do productive things. Not talking about politics like some nerds.
But yeah, that's the thing. We need to develop these critical thinking skills since we're young, because we do listen usually to our parents' political opinions and usually follow whatever they say, unless you grow up super rebellious, I guess. I don't know. It depends on each situation. But most of the time, I think it does follow that pattern. But that's the thing. We need to find a way to, yeah, maybe it's changing our education system. I don't know.
I think in one way I'm more optimistic, in one way I'm probably more pessimistic than Christina. Like, I think that I'm more optimistic in like a society's ability to sort of, you know, fight back against the wrong ideas. And even if it takes a long time, sometimes I do find that I kind of like have faith in, you know, humans' abilities to fight and conquer over, you know, viruses that are, you know, taking over people's brains, essentially, whatever. But I think I'm a little more pessimistic in the sense that I think that there are, most people are sort of naturally, I don't know if followers is the right word, but, you know, like when we talk about the right wing, left wing, like a lot of the people that were, you know, really, really like into hating Trump or whatever and vice versa. But those people, I'm like, dude, if you were born in like Texas, you'd be the same way about people burning flags. Like you'd be that there and vice versa. Like these, you know, mothers that are, oh, I'm like Fox News all the way. Trump's the God. I'm like, if you were born in like New York to a different family, you'd be just the exact same way the other way because you're naturally sort of wired. And I think a lot of people are. So I think that the idea that like everyone's capable of that, I don't always agree with, but I think that there are enough people, and I think that I do have like a little bit of faith in like humanity's ability to sort of persevere.
I guess I feel the same way as you, because I'm seeing more and more that people, I definitely see that a lot of people are trying to think a little bit deeper about things instead of seeing it at surface level. And I think one of the reasons is because like these major news channels, they're kind of sabotaging themselves because they're so obvious about the ways in which they're just trying to pit people against each other. And people are starting to realize that. And they're like, I don't like this. I want to get my information from elsewhere. But also, yes, at the same time, I do see that unfortunately, people are just so susceptible to, you know, the other way where you go based off of tradition, the way that you've been raised, the environment that you're in, and what's comfortable for you and what makes the most sense.
And has the least social ramifications too, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you were, whatever, like you said at that skate park, if you're the one guy that's going to go against the flow, like, you know, are you going to be that guy that, you know, steps away from the pack? And I think most people don't want that smoke.
You don't want to be Stacey Dash. Look at a Stacey Dash.
You also need like, I was saying this the other day. I feel like a lot of people, even with Biden now, are sort of like being like, oh, like when they even just, because it almost like so many people came online like politically in 2016, and it takes almost like two sides, like see it one way and the other way. So you can see how bullshit it is. Like you kind of see how CNN is like this. And if you're like, oh, they're the truth one, or you're like, this is the truth one. And then it flips and you see them flip and you're like, wait a second, they both just switch now. Like now the president's killing it. And so that you kind of go, it's almost like even just having like a long enough span a lot of times makes people be like, wait a second.
Yeah, it's kind of like wrestling storylines, it feels like.
Well, they get into a logic trap. Like he said, they take such a strong absolutist position on something that when that's not in their narrative anymore, they have to flip flop on the position and it looks ridiculous. So it's like
100%, yeah. And also like once it becomes like such a, I mean, especially when companies and they have a lot of power and they're all just kind of, you know, grifting off all this stuff to make money. Like if you look at the, you know, what was the recent one? Like the Mr. Potato Head thing where the potato head, they're like, okay, we're going to make it gender neutral, whatever. Like, you know, some like hip advertising companies, like, you know, this is a good way to get up. But then they just got killed so much online that they were like, oh, actually, we like took it back. And I think that a lot of these companies.
Wait, they
now
took it back? It's Mr. again?
I didn't know that.
No, basically what they said was they go, no, there's still Mr. Potato Head. We're just changing the company name to Potato Head. But like the way I interpret it is like that was them kind of. Because they're like, oh, let's do this thing to, you know, get some brand awareness. And then you become like the number one like controversy on the internet. And you're like, we're just trying to like fire this advertising campaign. I don't want to be like half the people hate us and half the people love us. Like, I don't think this is, you know, what the goal is for our toy company.
Like MyPillow almost. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like the same thing now.
Yeah. Yo, that guy is, yeah, exactly. He's fired up. So yeah, but I think that was a good strategy for a company is be like, but for some companies, you'll be like, oh, I'll position myself to be like we're the right wing pillar or whatever. But if you're like a toy company, it's like, I think that, you know, getting involved in sort of spewing whatever side you're on is probably becoming, the cost of it's becoming high as well, you know?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think, and like with that, I think we're basically running out of time here, but you know, let's go around. We'll start with Christina if you want to give like a final point and then tell people if you have anything going on where people could follow you or anything like that. You could plug that and then we'll go on to Ryan.
Yeah, I think basically my final point is just that ultimately we have to level the playing field and somehow make it so that there shouldn't be vulnerable groups of people that just, you know, are susceptible to hearing any sort of information, just repeating that back and making it their whole philosophy or their position.
Old people.
And I just think, you know, people in power are taking advantage because they have power, they have wealth, they have the ability to put out their message and get a lot of people to jump on board with that. So, like I said before, these critical thinking skills, we as the philosophy professors, our job is to kind of to get people to think more critically. But yeah, that's how I feel. That's me.
I think that she's on point with the critical thinking thing. I mean, that's probably one of the biggest things that people are lacking. And the only thing maybe I would like add is that they're probably hand in hand with like the idea that right now there's like so much ramifications for essentially having the wrong idea is like one of the things that like push people into so much dogma. Because, you know, even like as a kid, if you're trying to learn to play a sport, like you need to be able to like fail a little bit to, you know, to in order to find out where those boundaries are and stuff like that. And I think that if you have a situation where everyone's just yelling at everyone all the time, it's just way too easy to just put on a jersey and stuff. So like, yeah, we can probably move toward away from that and towards a more like critical thinking society probably be good.
Cool.
I guess like I would just say I don't like to add restrictions and add laws, but the one thing I will say is maybe we should just treat the news like they treat seafood at restaurants. Like, you're not allowed to say crab if it's not crab. You have to spell it with a K, or you have to say imitation crab meat. It should be Fox News, N-O-O, Actually, you can't do it like that either. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my fun.
Label it.
But yeah. Anyway, you guys. By the way, so if, I just realized you didn't give your Twitters, but if you want. But you could go back and give your Twitter.
Yeah, take a chance to, yeah.
But yeah, you can follow me at Gosh Carter, GOSHCARTER.
And you can follow me at Miss Nyancy, MSNAYANCI. And you can follow our podcast at BWT Podcast.
Yeah, and that's it. And if you guys have social media you want to plug, feel free. And then that's basically the show. Do you?
I'm at Ryan Long Comedy.
Ryan Long Comedy. Check them out.
New video every Monday.
Cool. And
I have no cool social medias to plug.
Oh, it's okay.
Just check out OnlyFans.
You could check out Christina at Brooklyn College, everybody. Sign up for her class.
Analog, old school. Show up in person.
Cool. All right, guys. Thanks so much. And yeah, that's been But Why, though. Thank you so much again. Peace.
Awesome.